Line sports fans, dig out the ding-dongs and ho-hos, because it's time for Phil Mackey's Fat Athlete Pecking Order.
Yeah, happy Bartolo Colon Day. It's a very exciting day, although it might be a two-day celebration if the forecast holds up. Looks like it's going to be, I don't know, according to the old iPhone forecast, like 60%+ rain later today.
iPhone forecast? I count on Dave. That's me.
You know, I count on Dave, too, but Dave needs an app. I think we need an app for Dave Dahl. Then I will count on him much more often. Although I appreciate the emails in the morning. That's very nice, internal emails. So this is tough because in honor of Bartolo Colon, I'm not counting him. So there's probably 20 guys you could put on this list. And I kind of went combination of the best fat athletes and just my favorite fat athletes. So, and then there's a couple on here that I take issue with. So I'm going to give you my 10. And then you can tell me what I left off or things that you disagree with.
I put together a list of like 15 that just came off the top of my head in the last few minutes. Just bam, bam, fatty. So I want to see how many hit your list.
All right, let's. And then we have Jason Stark a day early coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Number 10, I put Shaq near the end of his career on this list.
Yes, fat Shaq with the Celtics.
Shaq with the Heat for a minute. He won a championship with the Heat. Actually, Shaq at the end of his Lakers career was kind of chubby, winning championships too. Now, with Orlando and at LSU, he is just a muscle-bound beast who is bringing baskets down and delaying games. But Shaq near the end is number 10. Had to put a professional wrestler on this list. So Andre the Giant is number 9.
No, sure.
One of the great fat athletes of my childhood. Although he could be higher if he actually won a WWF championship at one point, and he didn't.
How is that possible? Not to completely take you away from the list, but seriously.
No, let's go down this path.
How is it possible?
This is the path I really wanted to go down anyway. Screw the rest of the list.
He was the immovable object.
So he won the championship at the end and then dumped it to Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3. But apparently the reason why he never won it in the 15 years prior is because they didn't need to put the belt on him as an attraction. So they could go into like Madison Square Garden and they're building out their card, right?
Yeah.
And the main event could be the championship match, but then the second main event could always be whatever Andre the Giant wants to do. An over the top rope battle royal, whatever. So they just never found it necessary from a marketing standpoint to put the title on.
That
makes sense?
It makes sense, but it's still tough if you're the Giant. I'd be bitter.
It's why the Vikings have never won the NFL title.
Yeah,
they're an attraction on their own.
A sideshow.
Number 8, old George Foreman. So George Foreman was one of the great all-time heavyweight boxers in the 70s and then early 80s. Then he took off for 10 years and came back and was more famous for selling a grill and eating hamburgers than he was for boxing among a lot of newer boxing fans. And old, fat, 50-year-old George Foreman just throwing haymakers is number 8 on my fat athlete list. Number 7, a man who once threw a perfect game hungover against the Twins, David Wells, on this list. Now, you could have put a bunch of pitchers on here. Bartolo, obviously. Could have put CC Sabathia, but I decided the guy who, I think David Wells is much more of a folk hero than CC Sabathia. So he makes my fat athlete list at number 7.
He's like your neighbor that you have beers with in the, you know, just sitting in your lawn chairs in the driveway. But who just happens to throw a perfect game.
Against a minor league lineup.
Hey, Dave, how's your weekend? Ah, oh, not bad. Just threw a gem at Yankee Stadium.
Wait, is that Babe Ruth's hat you're wearing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Picked it up. Let me give you one of these.
Number 6. Cecil Fielder. He once led Major League Baseball twice in a row in home runs and had 300 career home runs. I think he had more career home runs slightly than his playing weight. He had 319. His playing weight was in there somewhere, but Cecil Fielder, number 6.
Now I want to know if his even more fuller figured son is going to be on the list.
Spoiler alert, he's not on the list.
Wow.
If Prince had played a few more years and had, I think Cecil was more of, again, a folk hero than Prince. You know, Prince was a good player. If Prince had played another 5 or 10 years, or maybe just like another 3 years, and Prince went vegan for a while and vegetarian or whatever it was, but then I think he must have been drinking full pints of ranch dressing with every salad he had because he never lost weight.
That just mainlining cocoa.
Yeah, if the tiebreaker is that Prince was a vegetarian for like 2 years, so he's not on the 10. Number 5. 91 career rushing touchdowns, all of them pretty much like throwing a bowling ball point blank into the pins. Jerome Bettis.
Oh, sure. That's a great one.
The fat athlete list. Number four, multiple major wins and one of the great characters in sports, John Daly.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a great, when you just search fat athletes on Google Images, one of the top images that shows up is John Daly getting mic'd up for some event with his shirt pulled up to his nipples and just the beer gut hanging all out. Amazing. Number three, his nickname alone puts him in the top three. The Refrigerator. Mm-hmm. William the Refrigerator Perry. Now, this is where there's two guys in my top three that I actually thought about moving out just based on the parameters of being fat, because he's fat. But William Refrigerator Perry would not be one of the bigger defensive tackles in the NFL now.
No, absolutely.
He's almost like 315 or 320 pounds. I think Vince Wilfork is 80 pounds heavier than that. So Pat Williams was like 50 pounds heavier than that. Number two, Tony Gwynn.
Okay. Yeah. His, pleasantly plump, we'd call him.
Yeah, his playing weight sort of matched his career batting average. And number one with an asterisk, because if you look at his playing weight and size, so this man was 6'2", 215 pounds. If I just said to you 6'2", 215 pounds, I think Xavier Rhodes is like 6'2", 215 pounds.
Yeah, it could be someone who's absolutely ripped, or maybe, yeah, like I said, your neighbor who's got a little bit of a gut, nothing, you know, nothing obscene.
Babe Ruth is the guy on this list.
You think of that gut hanging over the bell, absolutely, as but he was trotting around the bases.
But then, I guess, if you, and that's when you like walk in to get a physical and you see the body mass index chart and it tells you now in 2017 that you're always like morbidly obese.
Yes.
That you if you're 6'2", you should actually weigh like 123 pounds
it's
and you just feel
shame. Yeah. Chart.
Yes. So then, you know, in the 1920s, 90 years ago, I think 6'2", 215 pounds is probably fat. So Babe Ruth is number one. Babe Ruth, Tony Gwynn, Refrigerator Perry, John Daly, Jerome Bettis, Cecil Fielder, David Wells, old George Foreman, Andre the Giant, and Shaq near the end. The top 10 fat athlete pecking order.
It's a very good list. I have a few names of my own that did not make your list. Do you want me to give them now,
yeah, sure,
or do you want me to wait a little bit?
Give a few now, and then we'll come back to this with Murphy in like 2 hours.
Well, you actually did mention Pat Williams just a couple moments ago. I would put him on my top 10 because he was an absolute character, and heck, the nickname was Fat Pat, so that
That's
only
true.
Makes sense. Let's see. You said David Wells. You said Fridge. You said Shaq. You said John Daly. I would put, for my professional wrestler, Andre the Giant's great, but I would choose the Earthquake.
Thought about that.
I mean, when he'd get a guy down and, you know, motionless in the middle of the ring, the whole move was to then jump in a circle around them and make the ring shake ridiculously uncontrollably.
You know what his gimmick was when he went to WCW? Like, after he had done the whole thing with Hulk Hogan and 5 years later goes to WCW, he was the Shark. And they painted on, you know how the Ultimate Warrior had that face paint? So they had face paint. They just painted like a shark's mouth off the corners of his mouth. And he did the same thing, but his move was the splash in the corner, like the shark splash.
Well, there's a dozen professional wrestlers you could come off just on
Rikishi,
top of the top.
Yes, Stinkface?
That's the one I just had come to my head right there. Tugboat, he was another one.
Well, what about Yokozuna?
Yes, exactly. Another one, I'll give you one more before we go to break here. You mentioned your boxer representative, George Foreman.
Butterbean?
Oh, where's Butterbean on the list?
Butterbean, yeah. I feel like Butterbean didn't face enough good competition. I think he made his money off just being kind of a gimmick.
And I'm okay with that.
He never fought Mike Tyson or anyone like that. But yeah, Butterbean would be, you could debate Butterbean over Shaq. Because Shaq was more just tall and thick than fat. It wasn't like Oliver Miller could be on this list, too,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, you're right. He could. Big Country could be there. Heck, late career Chuck could be on the list, even.
Yeah, Chuck with the Rockets at the end.
Yeah, he's getting a little poorly.
All right. Well, you can send us your suggestions, Mackie and Judd at 1500ESPN.com, or just tweet at 1500ESPN on the old Twitter machine. Let's catch up with our friend Jason Stark. Discuss trade deadline. We can talk about, he's got trivia for us too. And Brian Murphy will be back in. He's filling in for Judd, but he's on a Vikings conference call right now where they may be saying goodbye to Mankato. We're going to find out. So stick with us, Mackie and Judd.
Hang on. Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
So this is the dealio
on 1500 ESPN.
2006, Ozzie Guillen gave the feisty, plucky little twins with Puto playing third and Tyner playing half the time in left field the Piranhas.
Nobody has more fun talking sports than we do.
This team needs a nickname.
The home of sports talk.
Only animal I can think of for them is cockroaches. But, because they won't die. Cucarachas, right? They give up 900 runs and they come home and they stink and then they look pretty good for 2 days.
1,500.
They won't die. They won't go away.
ESPN.
It's time for baseball.
It's time for Talkin' Twins.
Talkin' Twins.
Now hanging out to talk some hardball with Mackie and Judd. Here's senior baseball writer and trivia buff Jason Stark, brought to you by the Canopy Group.
All right, breaking Vikings news. It's not exactly a huge secret, but with the Egan training camp facility or Egan practice facility opening up next year, this will be the last year of Vikings training camp in Mankato. So that just announced about 10 minutes ago. We'll dive into that later on this hour when Brian Murphy comes back in. But Jason Stark, welcome to the show. We've got 2 weeks left until the trade deadline. And actually, I got an email from one of our loyal listeners last night, and we just swapped a couple back and forth. And he poses a really good question. With all the information available today, are there even really any front offices? Like, we talk about selling high on players. Irvin Santana has a really good ERA, but not great peripherals. And can you even really fleece front offices in baseball anymore? I mean, there doesn't seem to be as many incompetent run front offices these days. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, now that Dave Stewart is gone in Arizona, there's really no front office that is being run like front offices were run in, like, 1888. This is a really sophisticated group of people, and they have incredible layers of information that you just wouldn't even comprehend. I think there are teams that come to mind maybe that feel like they have to win every trade. The Braves have that reputation. Especially after the Shelby Miller deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think the Pirates come to mind. These would be teams that when they look to sell, they really overprice their to the point that other teams complain that, and they have a hard time pulling off deals. But, I mean, if you're asking me, are there front offices that just have no feel for what they're trading for? I don't hear that anymore. You know, I don't want to name names, but there were general managers in the not that distant past who would go into a meeting, say at the winter meetings with another team, and that team would start asking them about prospects, and they wouldn't even know their own prospects.
Yeah.
You know, so those days are done. That ain't happening anymore. Like now, not only does every GM know his own prospects, they know every big-time prospect in every organization. It's incredible, the knowledge.
And even, you know, some of the teams that have maybe struggled, the White Sox, well, the White Sox just went from maybe worst farm system in baseball 12 months ago to maybe a top-five farm system by expediting their rebuild. The A's are in last place, but I don't think anyone would say that Billy Beane runs an incompetent operation in Oakland. So it's, and even like the Blue Jays and the Orioles are in last place in the East, but they've had a ton of success recently, and injuries and different things have derailed them. And the Twins, we were just talking, Jason, a year ago today, the Twins fired Terry Ryan. And who would have thought, even though this team is flawed, they'd be sitting here in playoff position, that they'd come back, they'd beat the Yankees, they'd be a game and a half back of the Indians for first place in the Central just 1 year later. So you can turn it around quickly too these days.
Yeah, I don't think even they thought they would be in this spot. Do you? I don't remember in spring training them talking of being a game and a half behind the Indians on July the 18th. I mean, they were just trying to figure out what they had, and they're still trying to figure out how they're so close to the Indians.
Yeah, they are, and they've got this stretch. They just lost 2 or 3 to Houston, but they beat the Yankees last night, so they get 2 more against the Yankees. By the way, happy Bartolo Colon Day here. We're celebrating in Minnesota. If it doesn't rain tonight, Bartolo Colon going to make his Twins debut against Aaron Judge.
God, I'm so excited. You think they'll let Bartolo DH?
That's what we're hoping, yeah. And even if he can just make it through somewhat unscathed, and then he'll be scheduled to pitch in Los Angeles against the Dodgers next week. So not only will he face the hottest team in baseball, but he'll get to hit in a Twins uniform next week.
Oh, that is awesome. He'll be right up the freeway from the site of his homer.
Yeah. That still hasn't landed, by the way.
You know, I gave out my Cy Yuck Awards last week, and I gave Bartolo the National League Cy Yuck Award with his 80 ERA. I couldn't find any former Cy Young winning starter who ever had an 8 ERA in any season after he won.
Yeah.
But this is his chance.
Yeah. Do you, well, what are your thoughts, Jason? I mean, because if you... So the first half was a disaster for him, and he's 44, and in all signs point to the gas tank, you know, finally running out. But in the 3 or 4 years before this season, he was a two-time All-Star. He was viable. He was making it work with an 88-mile-an-hour fastball. So, is there any chance in your mind that he could be serviceable as maybe a number three starter for a Twins team? Not looking to be full-on buyers, but just to kind of maybe catch a spark here.
A number three starter.
Well, for them.
It's great to dream. I'm a big fan of dreaming, but it's really hard to dream on this guy right now. The way he did it with the Mets was miraculous. I mean, to go out there and throw 90 to 95% fastballs at 44 years old, when he's and these fastballs were not traveling at the speed of light. Just the ability to sink them and sail them and make them disappear and locate them all over the strike zone. It's incredible to watch a guy do that. The Mets were in awe of what he did. He certainly didn't do it this year. And I mean, you'd love to think that somebody has some magic formula and they can make it all happen again. And maybe a change of scenery is what he needed, but you're just dreaming if you think that's going to happen. Sorry, man.
Who are your favorite fat pitchers of all time?
Oh, he's number one.
Is he?
You know, I'm a little saddened this week because Jumbo Diaz just got designated for assignment, and that is one of the greatest nicknames ever for a guy, right? Jumbo.
It is fitting, yes.
Yeah, and then there was Rich Garces. Remember him, right?
Oh, yeah. Was Rich Garces the guy who would sort of like turn his head aggressively toward home plate? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
No. I haven't memorized his delivery, but that sounds right.
I think it was. Was he a Diamondbacks pitcher from 10 or 15 years ago?
Rich Garces became a legend in Boston.
Okay.
He got around.
Oh, I'm thinking of Mike.
He didn't get around as much as Bartolo.
I might be thinking of, is it Mike Fetters from like 15 years
ago? Mike Fetters is another excellent one.
Was Todd Coffey the guy who would sprint in from the bullpen too? Todd Coffey would.
You had to love that. He's not the only guy in history ever sprinted in from the bullpen, but he was the most unlikely.
Yeah, he did it with the beer gut sort of flopping back and forth, and I think he bit the dust one time and took a chunk of the infield grass out, which made him famous.
Yeah, I mean, like, for these guys to come along in the age of the flat screen TV, which is a little wider. I think it's very helpful.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful. But when you can see like the buttons popping off when he runs in from the bullpen, it might not be a good thing. Hey, what are your for the Twins here? They're trying to figure out in the next 2 or 3 weeks. What should they do? Should they take offers for Santana? Are they contenders? And a lot of it depends on the Indians. And they're a game and a half back of the Indians. The Indians are 48-43. They've lost a bunch of games in a row now. What are your thoughts on the Indians down the stretch here? I mean, they've underperformed, and maybe they have a bit of the World Series hangover that the Cubs have, too. But do you think the Indians throttle down in the second half, or do they just not have the same, the formula that they had last year?
You know, people have been waiting for them all year to just blow out this division, right? But they've had such a weird year. If you look at their raw numbers, compare them to last year, they look almost the same. I'm not sure how that is, but there isn't a lot of difference. They've got this great run differential, right? They're plus 65. They've got a better run differential than the Red Sox. And the team chasing them is at minus 63. So you got a team that's plus 65, the second place team that's minus 63, and somehow they only lead by a game and a half.
Yeah.
That would tell you that if you look at run differential as a predictor of the future, how this is about to wind up. But the Indians have had a lot of health issues. Corey Kluber, Danny Salazar, Jason Kipnis, Lonnie Chisenhall, even the manager, right? And they've had a lot of key players who haven't played the way they projected. I mean, Carlos Santana has been a big disappointment. Kipnis has been hurt and hasn't been anywhere near the same guy. In the rotation, Salazar, Tomlin, Bauer have been a mess most of the time. I would say even Encarnacion and Lindor really haven't been what they thought they'd be. And, you know, like I was talking to a guy from another team yesterday who said he keeps waiting for the Indians to win that division by like 12 games. And they just haven't ever gotten on that roll.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's the temptation if you're the Twins. I mean, if they let you hang in it for three more weeks, maybe you hit the gas pedal a little bit more and try and take it from them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Twins are really in a holding pattern right now. They're going to wait at least a week, maybe more, to just try to figure out, you know, where they are, whether it really makes sense to try to buy. I mean, if they were to make a list of all the stuff they would have to buy to win the World Series, you can't possibly shop for all that stuff right now.
Correct.
So that's kind of a problem. But yeah,
although Amazon is delivering much quicker now than they ever have been, so I'm sure.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think you can order a whole new bullpen on Amazon, but I should check on that.
Yeah. All right. That's really loud music. All right, let's do trivia here with Jason Stark. You've brought trivia to the table again, and Dave Harrigan's going to sub in for Judd as we try and take you down.
All right, well, you seem to enjoy this, so I keep coming back with more.
We're masochists, Jason. We are masochists.
Nelson Cruz just reached 20 homers for the ninth year in a row. Okay. So if you look at Twins history, it's a little tricky because Harmon Killebrew did it 10 years in a row in a streak that started in Washington and ended in Minnesota. So I'm going to take him out of this.
Okay.
Other than him, no Twin has ever hit 20 9 years in a row.
Except for Robbie Grossman. Yeah. That went over Jason's head. It's fine.
I'm aware that you think Robbie Grossman is the greatest player of all time. He's won Babe Ruth, too. Right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right, back to the question. Only two Twins have ever hit 20 home runs, had a streak that lasted longer than 5 years in a row. In other words, six 20-homer seasons or more in a row. You got it? That's what you have to name.
And there's two of them. So 20 homers.
Hit 20 homers 6 years in a row or longer.
I think I have one of them, Dave. Tom Brunansky.
That's excellent. Tom Brunansky did do it six in a row.
Nice. Okay.
Very impressed.
And then the other one is probably, thinking out loud, Torrey Hunter? 2001 through 2007? Somewhere in there?
Torrey only did it 4 years in a row. That's the longest. That's a good guess.
Let's take one more stab here. One more stab at this.
It's all on you because I actually know the answer.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a little...
Dave and I had to confer on this after the question.
I'm
hanging you out to dry.
I'm trying to think if it... Well, I'll guess Kent Herbeck.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right.
Beloved Herbie.
Yes.
84 to 91, 8 years in a row.
And then the other home run anomaly for the Twins, in the middle of the steroid era where Greg Vaughn was hitting 50-plus bombs and Brady Anderson 50, I believe the Twins had a year in like 1998 or 1999 where they didn't have anyone hit 20 home runs.
I believe that's correct.
Matt Lawton hit about 17 in the middle of the steroid era, and everyone's like, wait a second, I know this is shady, but you know, we can turn our backs if you guys want a shipment. For God's sake.
No wonder Bud wanted to contract him, huh?
Yeah. You can't even hit 20 bombs in the steroid era. It's embarrassing. Jason, thank you. We'll catch you next week.
Good to talk to you, man. Thanks.
All right. Jason Stark, MLB free agent and one of the best out there. Dave, what's coming up in Stuff next?
Oh, we've got a Sid-like moment from a college football press conference. We've got to get into what happens when your GM doesn't know who the quarterback is.
Oh.
And a hot, hot baseball movie take.
Okay.
Hang on, Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
You stay classy.
On 1500 ESPN. And now, here's stuff you should know about.
There were some things going on in sports today that will make your brain fall out of your skull.
You know, you'd think you would have a better name than that with that kind of teaser.
Stuff you should know about. Here's Dave Harrigan.
Hi, Dave. Happy Bartolo Colon Day.
Yeah, same to you, Phil. It's a
Cheers.
Great day here.
Mm-hmm.
I have to bring you down a little bit, however, to start stuff you should know about. It's something we addressed yesterday during this very segment, but without you here, it just wasn't the same.
And now, Phil Mackey does everything he can to ignore reality and defend a hero of his youth, despite knowing in his heart that hero is broken beyond repair.
Now, which one is it?
It's your guy. It's Eldrick.
Tiger's in the news again.
He's fallen further than he's ever fallen before. He is out of the top 1,000 golfers in the world for the first time since he became one of the first 1,000. He is now 1,005. I find it incredible that they rank that many golfers, first of all.
Does that count like the club pro at like Woodbury Community Golf Course?
Actually, my buddy Barry, he's a pretty good stick. He lives just a couple houses behind me. He's really solid. I think he's
now that
about
Rook's buddy Tommy's lost some weight, so you know, he's in the top 1,000 now.
Yeah. How do we feel about Tiger now in four-digit territory, Phil? Are you coming back?
It's just going to make the comeback story that much sweeter.
You can't stop.
Does he have to make the cut? Like, if he just enters a tournament and plays a couple holes, can he get back into the top 1,000 by just entering a PGA Tour tournament? Or does he have to actually make the cut to jump up the leaderboard?
I actually think if he wins the Waterbury Open, he earns a spot on the Pro Tour with Shooter McGavin. I think that's his only way to get back on the tour. The GM of the Washington Redskins, Bruce Allen, held a little chat yesterday to let everybody know that, yeah, they couldn't come to a contract agreement with their quarterback, Kirk Cousins.
Our goal was to sign Kirk to a long-term contract with a final objective of having him end his career with the Redskins.
Now, wait a minute. Kind of sounded like he said Kurt with a T instead of Kirk, but he couldn't have done that.
He said it pretty fast.
He couldn't have done that, right?
On May 2nd, right after the draft, we made Kurt an offer.
Now, wait a minute. He didn't do it again, right? No.
That would be really disrespectful,
wouldn't it?
Yeah,
we must not be hearing that right.
We have not received any offer from Kurt's agent this year.
At least five or six times he screwed up the first name of his quarterback.
Well, you wouldn't want to give a long-term contract extension to a guy that you're not quite sure what his name is.
That guy, is it a C or a K? Guy, not sure. Yeah.
Isn't that classic Washington Redskins, though? Entire organization from top to bottom has been a joke for at least 10 years now. And if you look now, so Cousins was franchised for last year, and last year was kind of a prove-it year because he led the league in completion percentage in 2015. He almost threw for 5,000 yards last year. He completed almost 70% of his throws. You know, maybe it's possible that he wants to get out while he's still in his prime and go play for somebody else. So if this is just, if the reports are true and they offered him $50 million plus guaranteed and $75 million guaranteed with injury protection, maybe he's just saying, you know what, the owner doesn't know my name or whatever. The GM doesn't know my name. The owner is a sleazeball. The name is racist. The organization can't get out of its own way. I'm just going to become a free agent, and I'm going to go at some point, hopefully. How many years in a row can they franchise tag a guy? Like, could they franchise tag him for 10 years?
They cannot franchise him after this year. They can put some other tag on him. I can't remember what it's called, but no, this is the last time he actually be the franchise tag. But yeah, you're right. In the middle of, wait to be a free agent, I'll just make 20-some million bucks to quarterback your team year to year. That's fine.
I'll take $50 million over 2 years and then go play for an actual organization.
I think it's a transition tag. I think that's what they call it, but don't ask me what it actually means.
I won't.
Cliff Kingsbury is the coach of the Texas Tech Red Raiders football team. The young, good-looking fella. He's got a top high-octane offense. Fifth in the nation last year in putting up points. They also had the worst defense in the nation at stopping teams from putting up points. And some reporter at Big 12 Media Day, damn it, he's had enough. Very Sid Hartman-like.
Follow-up to Mr. Bowles' question, Coach. You're a fine coach. It's a great conference. Great school. All-world offense.
But?
I figure there may be 5,000 seniors who start on defense in Texas a year. You recruit from other states. Why can't you get 10, 15, or 20 who can hold your opponents to 30 points or less a game?
That's a great I wish I had the answer.
Listen up, sir. Listen up, you're genius.
Well, I thought he was going to maybe snap back. I thought we were setting up a Cliff Kingsbury meltdown. But that's a fair question, though. I think they give up 40-plus points per game, right?
A lot of points.
So every game you watch is a race to 50 or 60 points with Texas Tech and with Baylor. If you're recruiting in the state of Texas, you can't find, like the guy asked, 15 athletes who can, even without a great scheme, that can just go out there and knock down a pass. I mean, how many times per game, if they're giving up, you know, let's say they're faced with 15 defensive possessions or whatever it is, they're averaging maybe 3 stops maximum. Like, mm-hmm. You can't find, in the state of Texas, you can't find a couple guys to play defensive linemen, a guy who can sack.
Yeah. In a while. Yeah,
I'd rather watch my team lose 60-55 than some of these gopher offenses we've seen over the years where they're just like doing the read option and they're trying to get to 16 points. And it's embarrassing. I guess if you're going to lose, you might as well lose spectacularly in a game that has an over-under of, you know, 93. Makes it more fun.
All right. Red hot Hollywood take that has been hotly debated over the last 2 days since it was sent out on Twitter. Brian Kenny, formerly ESPN, now, of course, for the last several years, MLB Network.
Yeah.
Big baseball guy tweeting at 8:21 p.m. on the 16th, which would have been Sunday. Programming note, : Major League 2 greater than Major League.
Wow. Wow.
That's a red hot piping Hollywood baseball movie take.
It's aggressive. I would say Major League 2 gets scoffed at far too often. Major League 1 is a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
Major League 2 is a really good movie and better than most people. Like, Rotten Tomatoes probably has it low. And I think when you're ranking sports movies, most people wouldn't put Major League 2 on it. But you had the Jack Parkman storyline.
You did.
You had
Rube Baker behind the plate. Yep. Can't throw to the mound. Needs the Playboy thing.
Exactly.
Deal.
So, I don't know if I would go that far. Could I throw another hot, piping hot Hollywood baseball take at you?
You can't. Oh, but don't forget Kamikaze Tanaka, too.
Yep, runs into the fence.
Yeah, he was very solid in Major League 2, but it's not quotable. That's the problem. Major League is quotable. Major League 2, not really.
I saw this movie on, and I probably watched it 10 times, and I always forget about it when ranking sports movies. Mr. Baseball was on yesterday.
Mr. Baseball, starring Euchre, right?
Not Euchre. This is Tom Selleck.
Oh, that's Selleck. What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of...
I don't know which one you're thinking of.
I might be thinking of his Miller Lite ads where he went by something.
Yeah, you're on the right track.
I think I am.
This is Tom Selleck as a former burned out major league hitting star. And he goes over to Japan and he brings over kind of the American gritty style and he charges the mound at one point, and it's him trying to fit in with his Japanese teammates.
Okay.
There's a love story in there. Pedro Serrano is one of his teammates, but I can't remember if that was made after Major League or not, but that guy was in 2 baseball movies, including Mr. Baseball.
Dennis Haysbert.
Yep.
Was he known as Pedro Serrano?
No, but that would be amazing. If Pedro Serrano flamed out in the big leagues and went and played.
Let's have a spinoff starring Serrano.
No, he dropped the accent, and he was just an African-American baseball player.
Okay, I've never seen the movie. I might have to look it up.
Go check out Mr. Baseball at some point in the next week or two, and then let's re-rank our baseball movies for a pecking order.
I think we could absolutely do that. That would be fun.
Murph, when we come back, can you give us all the information about the Vikings breaking up with Mankato? Head nod? Okay.
Thumbs up.
Yes, I can do all that.
Sounds good.
I think there are tears being shed somewhere, but for the Vikings, it was sort of convenient. Now they've got their own girl in town.
Okay, we'll do that when we come back here, and then Dan Gladden will join us in about 45 minutes to help celebrate Bartolo Colon Day in the Twin Cities.
Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
All righty then.
On 1500 ESPN.
You may not have the time or desire to train for the Medtronic Twin Cities Marathon October 1st, but you can still participate. It takes a lot of volunteers to make the weekend of events happen. Head to 1500ESPN.com, keyword events, to find out how you can get involved in the most beautiful urban marathon in America. And this portion of Mackie and Judd with Mackie and Murph is sponsored by Mauer Buick GMC.
All right, Brian Murphy is back in here for Judd, who's going to be back in the mix tomorrow. The Vikings just held a conference call at the top of the last hour. You were on it. Let's bring in Lester Bagley, Vikings Executive Vice President of Public Affairs. And the announcement is, I don't think it comes as a huge shock because the Vikings have been building this massive new training facility in Eagan. And the announcement is this will be the final training camp, 52 seasons in Mankato, the final training camp in Mankato starting next week. So, Lester, we got a few minutes here. Just your general thoughts on leaving Mankato as an organization after a half century.
Well, it's on both hands. It's exciting news about our future in Eagan and the Twin Cities Orthopedic Performance Center, but it also it was a tough day, tough news. We had conversations over the last day or so with the community leadership in Mankato and the university leaders, the president of the university, Minnesota State Mankato, President Davenport, and with some of the Greater Minnesota Growth and the Visit Mankato folks who've been long-term partners and allies over many, many years. So, you know, bittersweet maybe, but you know, a great day but tough news, and we certainly understand and know what training camp has meant to Mankato and to our fans over the many years.
Lester, what are the obvious advantages of being able to keep this in-house? I mean, this is where the league is trending. At least two-thirds of the teams are staying at their own facilities because they can. How does this help the club?
Well, I mean, we want to, bottom line, put our football team in their best position to succeed. And, you know, by moving into a state-of-the-art Twin Cities Orthopedics Performance Center, it is going to be just that. It's going to be the best opportunity for them to succeed, and it's going to be a great venue and event space and ability to host up to 10,000 fans in that outdoor stadium. So it's certainly being built with the team in mind and built with the fans in mind in terms of hosting larger events. And you know, over the last year, we had about 64,000 in short of 3 weeks in Mankato. So it's a pretty good gate, and fans come out. And we anticipate, given the more centralized location, closer to the airport, 6 minutes from MSB Airport, a lot of our fans come in and planned kind of a summer vacation around camp. So we expect that there'll be an increase in turnout. But I think the bottom line is you know, we're investing significantly in this new practice facility, team headquarters, and you know, we owe it to our players, coaches, and staff that, you know, to put them in the best opportunity to succeed, and we think it's the proper move for our organization and for our fans. It's just tough given the 52 years of tradition and history that we've had in Mankato.
You mentioned 60,000. I think you had 64,000 was the tally last year in Mankato. A lot of people, as you mentioned, do plan their summer vacations around this. One of the trends, too, in the NFL, besides keeping things in-house, is you know, monetizing training camp. What are the Vikings' plans for 2018 in Eagan regarding public access?
It'll be full access, and we don't have the exact dates, and Coach Zimmer and Rick Spielman set the timeline and set the dates for training camp, you know, leading up to camp. So next spring, early summer, we expect that the coach and GM will set the dates. But we think it'll be pretty close to that three-week window, and that it'll be full access and accessible to the fans and free and ability for fans to come out. We think, as noted earlier, that it'll be an increase in turnout, and we're working to accommodate that. As you know, it's going to be, as you know, Brian, the 40 acres are just for the team headquarters and practice facility. The overall development is 200 acres, and we're working on a hotel concept right now, but we've kind of turned the corner on the construction, or on the design anyway, and the construction is going full steam on the practice facility, but now we're looking at a broader hospitality and mixed-use development, and we're working diligently on those elements and also taking advantage of the existing infrastructure, hospitality infrastructure that's there in Eagan and in the Southeast Metro. So it'll be a transition as we phase in the broader development project. But we're excited about the opportunity to get our fans there into state of the art, but also a very fan friendly environment, which is how this facility is being planned right now in Eagan.
We have full details about the Vikings news. If you missed it, Lester Bagley has joined us the last few minutes. The Vikings will be holding their final training camp in Mankato, 52 years, and then moving to Eagan. You can read about it on 1500ESPN.com. Lester, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, no problem. And again, appreciate the chance to update it and update you guys and your listeners. But the last thing really is that we wanted to announce this, you know, up front. We want to make this final year a true celebration. We felt we owed it to our relationships with the university and the community of Mankato to let them know up front, and then to work with the community to have some celebrations. So there'll be a lot of stuff commemorating the 52 years and a couple of events and lots of players and alumni and legends down there as well. So more details to follow, but appreciate the chance to come on with you guys.
If you can use your poll to bring Boomtown back for 3 weeks, that'd be awesome.